State, the Morning Show with Greg Berg is next.
Support for The Morning Show comes from the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, offering a master's degree in clinical mental health counseling. Work as a licensed professional counselor or mental health and wellness advocate. Details are available at uwp.edu.
We welcome you to the Wednesday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg, and I am really delighted that on today's program we can highlight for you and preview for you two lovely holiday events that are coming your way. One of them, which we'll talk about in the second half of the hour, is actually shared with the public beginning Friday night, and that is the next signature spotlight concert from the Racine Theater Guild called I'll Be Home for Christmas. But first, we're going to talk about an event that is initially shared with the public this coming Saturday. And it is the latest incarnation of Ye Olde English Christmas Feast, which of course is one of the longest and happiest holiday traditions here in Kenosha. And we are going to be talking today with three people intimately involved in Ye Olde English Christmas Feast and who have been hard at work to make all of this happen, even within the restrictions of COVID-19. So we have, first of all, Polly Amborn and John Che. Polly Amborn, the director of choral activities at Tremper High School. John Che, the choral director at Indian Trails High School. And we also have with us Brian Lynch. And for any of you who have ever attended Ye Olde English Christmas Feast, at least in recent years, you have enjoyed the spirited hosting of Brian Lynch, who is public relations manager for SUBSQUA, the Society for the Preservation and Encouragement of Barbershop Quartet Singing in America. And but he dons a different apparel and shifts into a different mode to be the wonderful host for this event. And even in this virtual feast, he will be serving in that role as well. So we're going to be talking with all three of these busy people about all that has gone on behind the scenes to make this year's Ye Olde English Christmas Feast possible, and of course, unlike any other. So Polly Amborn, John Che, Brian Lynch, we welcome all three of you to the morning show.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Good to have you here. Good to have you here. So Polly and John, let's talk first of all about just the decision to go ahead and have Ye Olde English Christmas Feast somehow, some way. Tell us about the conversations, the discussion that occurred around that question. When did that discussion begin, and what sort of shape did that discussion take?
We ended up pulling the feast committee together this summer, which is directors, but also advisors to various student groups and people that have been with the feast for the better part of, 20 years and more, for sure. And the priority was giving the kids the opportunity to do the performance of some sort. And, you know, we said we can live without the set, we can live without the food, we can live without a lot of things, but we really want to give as many, you know, of the kids a chance to do this feast in some way as we can. And so that was really the seed, is, you know, what's the priority? And then what can we do to make it as much like the feast as we possibly can?
Was there a quick and easy agreement about that? Or, I mean, was everybody in a sense on board with trying to make this work somehow?
I think everybody wanted to, and we were willing to do whatever it took to try to get those experiences. We knew that some things would not be possible, but we put together as many things that we thought would be possible to give them as much of an experience as we could and do something really great for our community.
So explain how it was even possible to rehearse, to gather your singers together, given the restrictions of COVID. I mean, what sort of restrictions have been in place with the school district? And I mean, in other words, within what parameters did you have to operate in order to be permitted to do this and to do it safely?
We had to get a kind of a, I don't say a waiver, but we had to get a plan together. And Mr. Che did a lot of the work with that, kind of modeling it a bit after what the athletic teams were looking at with as far as spacing and equipment and using, you know, certain doors and all sorts of things, because we weren't operating as a class, much as every other year we're an evening enrichment ensemble. And so we normally would meet in the evening. And so it's kind of a different sort of thing. So each student had to get a release form signed, you know, saying that they would be wearing masks. We would do all that we could for spacing, and they would not be, you know, sharing equipment or sharing materials or sharing water bottles. And we kept our rehearsal time much shorter. Instead of a typical 3-hour rehearsal twice a week, we had an hour and a half rehearsal once a week. So it was a drastic reduction in rehearsal time.
John, tell us about the personnel. When was the roster for this year's feast chosen? And has that roster changed at all because of COVID? I mean, were there certain students who, for whatever reason, felt like they just could not be a part of it given these current circumstances in which we're living?
Yeah, absolutely. We generally take our returners back. So we offered the invitation back to all the returners. Once we got word that we could continue with this from our district, we sent out Polly sent out a message to all the returning kids from her list, and we got a response back and then asked who was still going to participate. And then we looked at our needs in terms of voicing and what school they're from, and we did some auditions or we did some placements and bringing some people in to fill some of those gaps. We definitely did not fill every spot that we normally would fill. The group is quite a bit smaller than it normally is, but we put together a lot of really high quality kids to make this feast work.
Very good. So how many singers are we talking about then?
What was it, 20?
We had 32. That were all on the roster. Normally we would be at 42.
So Polly, for somebody who has not ever been to Ye Olde English Christmas Feast, I think it would be helpful for them to understand what a so-called normal feast includes, and then we'll have some sense of what this feast is going to be by comparison.
Well, a normal feast would include the singers as this year and the jesters as we have this year, but we would also have another vocal ensemble. We'd have a brass ensemble, a string ensemble from usually two different schools on a couple different nights. We'd have a recorder ensemble. We'd have a drama piece, which is usually very funny and a highlight of the show. We usually have tumblers. We usually have some bagpipers and Irish dancer or Scottish dancers from Milwaukee. We have Irish dancers. We have pages and wenches that are our serving people, usually about 60 some kids that serve an 8-9 course meal. Everyone can't keep track of how many courses there are, but it's a lot of food. We have usually a beautiful set. We transform the cafeteria at Tremper into something that's almost unrecognizable, because we're like physically building walls and hanging big banners and curtains, and it's really quite something. So many people can't believe it's what it usually looks like, you know, in comparison. And there's just so many things that are added to this feast as far as just atmosphere with, we have players of the harpsichord and things like that. We'll have all sorts of wonderful events. And this is, you know, something that's been going on for 46 years. And so it's taken on various traditions that every year we always do this. And then some years we add something new and try a new twist, but that's mostly the traditional stuff.
Right. So give us a sense of how much of that is still possible this year, given where we are.
Well, we kept the singers, the Madrigal singers. We did not add on a second group just because we just didn't feel like we had the space or the ability to try to handle that second group. And then we have our jesters. And again, Brian and Laura just took on the returning jesters. They didn't feel like there was the time or ability to practice because of the spacing with them and those constraints. So they took on, luckily they had a lot of returning people. We had one returning recorder player, and that was Kirsten Glinsky, who is Kurt Schalgren, our feast founder's daughter. She's been leading our recorder ensemble for many years, and I called her and said, "Your dress is waiting," and she graciously came back and played the recorder for us at the beginning of one of our pieces. That's our feast. Oh, we have a string ensemble. We have a string quartet that is also featured in a virtual manner. But Helen Breitenbach was gracious enough to get students together to play a string piece as well. Hmm.
John Che, before we turn to Brian Lynch, John Che, tell us a little bit about what it was like to prepare music for this year's feast, given the drastically reduced amount of rehearsal time. And also the circumstances, the physical circumstances in which that rehearsal had to take place. How different did this feel from previous feasts?
Just the sheer amount of music, it's so far down. We kept a few of the traditional things that we normally would do and added a few pieces that we would do. Instead of doing a set of four or five in a Madrigal set, we would do two. I mean, just the time constraints of the rehearsal time, it just didn't allow for us. And we didn't, we also struggled with kids not being able to come throughout many of the quarantine type things where kids weren't allowed to come. So we'd be short five or six some nights or another night. So we had to really be careful about how we picked our music, and our balance wasn't always what we wanted it to be. So we picked music that would be conducive to what we had for balance. And something that the kids could be really successful at, as well as opposed to just give them something that a little bit of rigor, so they'd have to work at it too and get some things down. Rehearsing an hour and a half once a week is really hard, especially for retention from week to week. But it's a very, very much different. It's a lot shorter and a lot less music than we normally would do.
Right, and yet I have a feeling that what is the same is the bar of excellence you were trying to attain.
Yeah, absolutely. There was never, I don't think we ever kind of faltered on that. I don't think that's in our DNA at all. Colleen and I have been together a long time, and it's not something that we really do, but it was, we just had to be smart about the music we picked depending on voicing and our time constraints. So, okay. And they sang it well and it worked hard.
Very good. For those of you just joining us, we're talking about this year's Ye Olde English Christmas Feast from the Kenosha Unified School District. There will be a feast, but a different feast than, of course, we're accustomed. We've been talking with Polly Amborn and John Che, two of the choral directors involved in the musical preparation for this year's feast. And we want to bring into the conversation now Brian Lynch, who for a number of years has been the host of Ye Olde English Christmas Feast. Brian, how many years has it been?
This is my 20th season in the role.
Holy cow. So happy anniversary. I mean, I said recent years because I know there are people who have been going to this feast for 25, 30, 35 years. And I know the first one I went to, you were not in the mix as yet. And now we can hardly imagine the old English Christmas feast without you. So explain what your role is in a typical feast and how that role is maybe just ever so slightly different this year, or at least in terms of some of the specifics of what you'll do.
Sure. I took on the role of the Lord High Chamberlain 20 years ago after Terry Lawler had played it for 25 years. And believe me, every year I expect Terry to come back and claim it back. I mean, he's deceased, but that really wouldn't stop him. So as the Lord High Chamberlain, I'm the host of the feast. I, you know, basically announce the order of activity in the show. In a usual year, it'd be proclaiming the opening of the show, welcoming the singers, welcoming each act, guiding the guests through what's to take place. It is, you know, it's a privilege to be able to have been part of it for so long. This year, obviously, it's different. It's not less, it's a different experience. And I think that's really important. And the entire production team has had that sensation going through the entire thing. We were devoted to the idea that we could have the most important elements of the pageantry, which seems strange to say when you're watching it through YouTube, but KUSD's media production department has done a gorgeous job of filming the performances of the singers on stage. It's beautifully lit. The set is beautifully decorated. They shot it with passion, you can see. And so much of what the feast is about is the beauty of these kids making music that is way past what anyone should expect of a high school kid. And the passion that they make, that they bring across. I mean, it comes across even with a mask covering half their faces. So, I mean, from that standpoint, it's the same feast that we've always had. So to make that happen, we created a little framing piece that explains that, you know, we're living in our own homes instead of our lofty hall this season. That we're still finding the most important things of connecting with our friends and our traditions. So it's going to be a great show. You're going to like it.
So, in other words, your script acknowledges the current moment, albeit in a language that won't be terribly jarring. I mean, we're not going to hear the letters CDC in what you say. not modern jargon. In the language of the feast, you're going to be, in a sense, describing this extraordinary moment in which you find ourselves.
Exactly. And to that, we bring, you know, the same joy with our jesters and the same, the same elegance of costuming that you see in all the performers and things like that. So in those regards, it's exactly the same thing. And, you know, to make something good out of something that's difficult, we will be able to reach more people with our feast this year than we probably have in years past. In past years, we would seat, 1,200, 1,300 people across four shows, somewhere in that range. I mean, we have the potential to reach that many people on the first night,
right,
and for the rest of the year. So, you know, in some regards, we're hoping that this is an introduction to the feast for people who have missed it for the past 46 years and will be with us next year in person.
Very good. We have not yet talked about food and the fact that actually this feast, even this virtual Ye Olde English Christmas feast, still includes literally a feast, still includes food. And Brian, I understand that you're kind of the main person to talk about that. So tell our listeners how there is food even with this virtual feast.
Our friends at Sophisticatering have been catering the feast since the early 2000s. They have always delivered fantastic food. And this season, there's an opportunity for you to order your feast food online, pick it up at Sophisticatering on Saturday afternoon, and then eat while you're watching the feast on Saturday night. So go to our webpage at feast.org, FEASTE.org, or facebook.com/feast. That's feast with an E at the end, too. And you can get a link to ordering the food. So we'll have many of the foods that we're accustomed to having before. We'll have the wassail to start you out. We'll have the great beef barley soup and bread. We'll have the chicken and green beans and the beloved figgy pudding with a vanilla custard. We will not be igniting that one in your home. You'll have to do that yourself.
And again, people need to place those orders right away this morning, correct?
Correct. We have to close the orders by noon on Wednesday afternoon to get all the orders placed in the food order correct. So go to our webpage or to facebook.com/feast, FEASTE.
Right. That probably at this very moment or the moment you're done listening to the morning show today. Very good. Polly and John, what can you tell us, and Brian, feel free to join in terms of the fact that this was, in a sense, a feast that you had to shape for a camera lens or camera lenses. Did that change very much about what you did in terms of who did what and where they did it and how they did it? Or by and large, did you try to keep this, in a sense, a normal feast that the cameras tried to capture to the best of their ability? In other words, did you think about making this a cinematic feast?
Not really, not purposefully. I mean, really the beautiful, the beautiful job that KUSD's department did really made it more cinematic than I ever thought. We knew that we couldn't, build the set and wouldn't build the set. And we felt we'd get better sound by putting the kids on stage at Tremper. And normally it takes place in our cafeteria and we rebuild all that. But our beautiful new auditorium is now a place that we did the filming. And so basically we put them on risers, similar to a choral concert, but of course we spread them apart. And so the most dramatic thing we did as far as movement, we did a processional, much like we would do for the feast. So we did kind of stay true to that. And the jesters still did their work, but they did it out at Petrifying Springs Park. They got a really lucky, warm November day, and they got a lot of interesting looks, I understand, as people drove by while the jesters did their portions of the feast, some introductions to songs, and they acted out and did the Christmas story. So there's lots of things that are very much the same, just maybe in different places than we normally would do.
Hmm. Very good. Anything to add, John or Brian?
I think what I would add is that during whatever time we have where kids don't get a chance to sing together very often, they're provided with an opportunity to make music. And so these kids and so many, and us directors yearn for it so bad sometimes that when we finally get it, it's just amazing just to have them together and to make music and to sing together and do some sort of a performance that is something that touches our hearts and really, really during these times really helps us through it.
Right. So, Polly, how do people experience the Old English Christmas Feast this year?
Well, it's free, and that's a lovely price tag. And so they just need to go. It won't be released until 7 o'clock on Saturday night. And it's just basically a YouTube link that will open. So if you try to go there too soon, it just says we'll release in 4 days or whatever. And then they can watch it. We wanted it to be at that specific time so that if people wanted to do food and all that, they could make it kind of an event. But then after that time, they can go to it anytime to watch it.
And how do they find the link?
The same place that Brian was talking about with the, you can take it, Brian, if you want it.
Sure, it'll be on our Facebook page at facebook.com/feast with an E on the end. Or feast.org, either one of those will have a pointer to it. Or it's on the KUSD YouTube channel, if you're accustomed to finding things there. So come there. We may or may not have some kind of live chat experience, too. We're kind of noodling that around, too. We want people to feel together, too, while they're watching it. Now, for most of the kids, that's going to be, they're going to be Snapchatting away, so it probably doesn't matter anyway.
John, I can't remember if you have touched on the matter of the alumni who are part of this year's feast and the virtual choir. I think maybe we have not talked about that. Can you just, in a minute or two, tell us about that?
In this time, there's a lot of virtual choirs going around. So adding something like this, we just thought that it would be kind of a nice thing to incorporate some alumni. And so we recorded a session and we did one of our most traditional pieces that we do after the Christmas story and had them sing virtually by themselves. And we received 50 submissions. And so, and then we have an incredibly talented high school student here at Indian Trail, part of our Communications Academy, who did the editing of sound, took all the sound off, put it all together, and then put a video together of it. So you'll have a screen full of people singing all by themselves, but also together. We have alumni from 1988 to somebody that couldn't do the feast this year for whatever reason and graduates in 2021. So
wow.
we have alumni from and current students and alumni of the feast from that point.
From generation to generation. Very, very good. That'll be a very special addition to everything. Wonderful. This year's Ye Olde English Christmas Feast, and it is shared with the public beginning Saturday evening at 7 o'clock. Brian Lynch, I want to take a second to just hear from you about the Society for the Preservation and Encouragement of Barbershop Quartet Singing in America, for which you are the public relations manager. What has life been like for the Barbershop Society during COVID-19?
Been topsy-turvy like everybody else. And just like the feast, we are all finding ways to innovate and change and adapt. We're seeing lots of virtual choirs, seeing lots of recorded Christmas shows like this. And we're seeing a lot of people stretching to do things they never thought were possible before. And that's, to me, that's really gratifying, because we will emerge from this stronger and smarter than we were. We're finding so many of our groups that meet every week are managing to meet online by Zoom, and they're bringing in coaches and leaders and teachers from all over the world to their chapter. So we're actually going to be on the other side of this, feeling more connected to one another, more aware of the possibilities of having a collaboration really around the world. So from those, you know, those measures, things are going great. Yes, it's hard not to have your singing fix every week face-to-face, as our choral directors can tell you, but we're surviving and thriving through it.
Very good. Good to hear. We had a conversation with Polly Amborn about life at Tremper High School in the choral department. John Che, real quick, tell us how Indian Trails has been trying to fare during COVID-19.
We're just trying to create as many meaningful experiences as we can. Fortunately for us, we have a subject that touches kids' hearts a little bit. And so just trying to get to that part still, whether we're virtual or in person, to understand music and to get better at singing, but at the same time have that sense of community and love and all the things that come with music that you don't get in other classes that we offer, that they so desperately want to be in our class for, that just trying to provide those. And whether we do those virtually or do those with a conversation or do those by singing or do those by listening or getting together if we can with those that are in person, we have an opportunity to try to do those things.
I know that it has been a frustrating, challenging thing to be toggling back and forth between in person and virtual, and sometimes a mix, and sometimes you or others are taken out of commission or are put into isolation and so on. That's made all of this exceptionally tricky, I should think.
Yeah. It's terrible. But, you know, whatever, I think that a lot of us would agree that whatever it takes to, if we have to stay at home for a little bit or we get quarantined or we have to close down, for us to be able to get back together at some point every now and then, is worth it than to not be able to be together at all.
Right. So, and I'm sure that you look to 2021 with expectation and hope that something at least remotely resembling normalcy is going to be with us, and particularly when it comes to making music.
Yeah. So I'm holding out hope for this year, though, still.
Ah.
The school year, please.
Okay. Well, we are really appreciative of all the efforts behind the scenes to make a Ye Olde English Christmas Feast possible for this year. Polly, remind our listeners once again about everything essential they need to know in terms of partaking of this year's feast, both musically and gastronomically.
Well, they the feast.org page, feaste.org, is a big one. And then our Facebook page, which is, help me, Brian, it's
Facebook.com/feast.
Thank you. Yeah. Yep. You got to remember that E at the end. Those are going to be your main places to go. You can, certainly call the Fine Arts Department, and we'll make sure that they're armed with information, but they won't be there on Saturday. So if you're having trouble getting on to that, the thing right on Saturday night, no one will be there then. But that would be another good possibility for some help.
All right. And then we want to remind people about ordering their food today before 12 noon if they want to be part of that. And at the same website or the same pages, they'll find that information as well?
Yes, absolutely. It's all right there. And it's really quite easy. I've already ordered mine. And so it's really pretty simple.
Very good. Polly Emborn and John Che, two of the choral directors for Kenosha Unified, and Brian Lynch with the Barbershop Society, all three instrumental in the creation of this year's virtual Ye Olde English Christmas Feast. My thanks to all three of you for being part of the morning show, and best wishes for this year's feast.
Thanks, Greg.
Thanks a lot.
You're listening to The Morning Show on WGTD HD, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg.
And for part two of today's morning show here on WGTD, I am glad to be connecting with two friends from the Racine Theater Guild, Doug Instanis, the managing and artistic director, and Jocelyn Fish, who is director of marketing and something that I can't read. Marketing and what? Development. I can tell it started with D, but other than that, marketing and development, and actually probably development is especially important nowadays for just about every performing arts organization. So Doug and Jocelyn are here on the morning show in part to talk about the Theater Guild and its efforts to weather this really unhappy period of COVID-19, but also to talk about something really, really special that is being offered up to the community this weekend. The latest in the Signature Spotlight Concert Series, and this one called, I believe, I'll Be Home for Christmas. And they've both been very, very busy putting this together and all of the finishing touches that are going to make it something very special. Doug Instanis, Jocelyn Fish, we welcome both of you to the morning show.
Good morning.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. So, first of all, a lot of our WGTD listeners will know what the Signature Spotlight Concert Series is, but for anybody listening who doesn't, give a really, really, really quick summary of what this concert series is.
Well, a number of years ago, we decided that we wanted to do some more fundraisers, and music was a big draw for us. And there are a number of performing arts groups that were doing concert series, and I asked Rob Cruz to look into that for me, and being a very talented musician and teacher, he got very excited about the idea. We put together a series of, at that time it was one night only type of concerts. We have so many really, really talented singers that maybe couldn't commit to doing a 3-weekend musical, that this really filled a niche for them, so they could come in and do one night of performances, a shortened rehearsal schedule, and share their talents and their love for performing. And so it's been wonderful. It's kind of a you know, sometimes it's a huge commitment to do a regular musical. You're talking, you know, 3 months of time, and the Signature Spotlight series allows people to showcase their abilities and their talents and have a reduced rehearsal time. So it's been great. Then it got so popular that we decided to do, you know, two performances. And so now when we weren't able to do that, we had one scheduled at the end, you know, I think it was in April last year that we had to cancel. So that's been on hold. And when we got the okay from the board to do some online programming, Rob stepped up again and tried to put his concert back together, and we decided to do it online, and that was very exciting and scary at the same time. Mm-hmm.
So Jocelyn, I know that you were one of the people behind the camera for this particular Christmas concert that's gonna first be shared with the public this Friday night. Give our listeners some sense of what they will see and what they will hear if they connect with this special offering from the Theater Guild.
Sure. So we are very lucky to have lots of talented volunteers here, both, you know, who like to be on stage and those that like to be behind the scenes. We are very lucky to be working with Michael Steinbach of Bach Photography to make the actual filming process of this possible, because we really wanted to do it in a very safe way. First of all, everyone came in one at a time. They sang. We all wore our masks behind the scenes. Mr. Greg Berg happened to be an accompanist for us on every song. And you, I know you sat there with your mask on while you were playing. So we wanted to make it safe. We wanted to make it fun. And, you know, everyone's at home wishing they were here. So we wanted to bring the spirit of the Theater Guild to them. So we just had a lot of fun making those moments happen. You know, you'll hear some classics like Hard Candy Christmas and I'll Be Home for Christmas and the Christmas song, and then some different things that you might not be familiar with, including, I know, Greg, you were kind enough to share with us your own piece that you composed, Pace, which means peace in Italian, and it's a beautiful number that you actually get to sing with your wife, Kathy. So it's really going to be a little bit of everything that anyone will enjoy. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
One of the things that I was struck by was the attention to detail and the care with that was taken with every visual element, so that this just isn't something pretty to listen to, but pretty to look at as well. Just give our listeners some sense of the lengths to which you and others went to make this visually really a feast for the eyes.
Definitely. Yeah, and you know, it was even just coming up with little vignettes of where we were going to perform these numbers. Bob Benson helped us kind of decorate the set to have cozy fireplace moments, and then we had an outside in the snow moment, and then we even brought in some nice candelabras to decorate the stage. So it all came together to look not only beautiful, like you said, but we really have some very talented artists that were so excited to be performing as well. I think both Doug and I were pleasantly surprised how happy everyone was to be back in the theater and to be doing something, even if it was for, you know, 5 minutes of their time to come in and sing for people.
Doug Instanis, you weren't exactly the director of this, but in some ways you were serving that function, at least from time to time. How different is it to be directing something for the camera lens versus directing something for a live audience? I mean, for the people sitting in the auditorium, which in this case are none, because of course that kind of live performance just isn't permitted right now. But how different is it to be thinking about the camera lens and the screen?
The number one thing a director is supposed to do is be the audience of one. And I'm very adept at that on stage. If you've worked with me, you've seen me sit in many seats over time looking to see what the audience sees. Through the camera is very different because, you know, we're new to this and we don't really know what our options are. You know, where the camera angle is, what's expected, how do we change that? What do you do in post-production? Can you lighten it up? Can you darken it? How's the sound quality going to be? You know, on stage, you see what you see. And the camera is a whole different thing. If the camera is too high or too low or a little to the right or to the left, it makes a big difference. You know, there's a Christmas ornament that is moving in the wind that is upstaging the actor. You know, these things you don't know, I mean, until you see it through the eye of the camera. On stage, the audience can look anywhere they want. You know, and you have to use different tricks to get them to focus on where you want them to do. It really is, you know, the cameraman's responsibility when you do a film to really set that and set the picture and set the frame. And as Jocelyn said, you know, Mike is so talented and has been able to really, the quality of the picture, the quality of the recording is really important because it just sets the tone. You can have the best singer in the world, but if they're in the dark and you can't hear them, it just ruins it. And Mike has been working diligently on making sure the sound is just right and that the lighting is just right. So I think it's going to be a really wonderful concert. And but it is difficult because you've also got four people all sitting around talking about, well, what should we do with the lights and what should we do about that? And every time we do this, we get a little bit better. So if we ever decide to go into the movie business, we are going to be really good by the end of the year.
Very good. So Jocelyn Fish, explain how this is being shared with the public and what people need to do if this is something that they are anxious to see.
Yeah, first and foremost, feel free to go to our website, racinetheater.org. We've got all the info there. We will be showing this. The premiere will be this Friday, as you said, December 18th at 7:30 p.m. So you're going to be logging on. You can purchase a ticket, and then you just click the link in the email for the ticket you get, and you get to log on at 7:30 and watch the show. But we also know, you know, the holiday season goes through next couple weeks here. So if you're not able to join us on Friday, you actually have the choice to watch the show anytime you want, December 19th through December 31st. So let's say on Christmas Day, you want to watch it with your family. You can go back to our website and purchase a ticket to watch the same concert at any time you want. And as you're unwrapping presents on Christmas Day, you could enjoy it with your whole family. So tickets are, we're doing $15 for individuals or $25 for a household. So it's just, and all the money comes back to the Racine Theater Guild. You know, it's been a very quiet year around here, and we've been very fortunate that a lot of people have supported us, but I think both Doug and I and the board felt like we really wanted to make something to connect with the community first and foremost, but we do also need to make sure that we're going to be able to survive our closure for however long it goes on. So it's, you're really investing in the future of the Theater Guild, which is also great.
So so this is a event in which people are asked to, in a sense, purchase a ticket, and then this allows you to view this, and at the same time you are supporting the Racine Theater Guild. Jocelyn, maybe you could say just a further word about the kind of support that you have received from the community through the course of this closure, which of course began back in the spring.
Yeah, it's been a long time. It's crazy to think that we've been shut down since March. But really, since day one, it's been not only financial support, but just emotional and people checking in on us and saying how much they miss us and how much they want to come back. We're very fortunate in the fact that national and state government has also started to step up and support the arts. We were honored to receive $50,000 through the CARES Act from the National Endowment for the Arts. And then directly through the state of Wisconsin, through their CARES Act funding, we did also receive funding from the Cultural and Arts Grant, as well as the Live Music and Entertainment Venue Grant. So that's been very helpful. It gives us a lot of hope. But you know, we're an organization that makes hundreds of thousands of dollars a year to maintain our building, to maintain costs of just heating and lighting sometimes. And even though we're not doing shows, we still have to keep a roof over our heads. So now is the kind of the end of the year push we usually do. One thing we talked about in our request outs community this year is that it's been a year of unknowns, not only for us, but we definitely understand that a lot of people's lives are very different than what they imagine them to be. But if people, you know, even have an extra $10 here or there to support us, it's been really incredible to get you know, that kind of check coming in the mail or donation online or what have you.
Very good. Doug Instanis, I know that when people go to the Theater Guild's website, they don't just get information about this special Christmas concert, but there have been other things put together by the Guild to help keep you connected to the community. Just give us a real brief summary of the kind of things that are there.
Well, on Monday, we start with a Packy holiday special. Packy is the Racine Children's Theater mascot, and Packy will be starring in The Grinch That Stole Christmas through Zoom. So all the youngsters can enjoy Packy. You know, we miss Packy a lot. All those kids come in and they want to see their elephant and get their autographs, and a lot of people's first experience with theater is through the Racine Children's Theater Packy Play. So we'll be doing that. And we're also looking at other ways of bringing some online programming. We're still trying to get a sense of when we can do live theater again, when the city will, you know, kind of allow us to start performing. So every day we keep looking at that and trying to find different ways to connect with people. We're talking about doing a couple more programs by the end of the year, maybe a concert, maybe a comedy show. We're just flying by the seat of our pants here as far as how long we will be shut down. So again, as Jocelyn said, the community has been so wonderful in donating their season ticket money back to us and sending us all sorts of kind words of support and how much they miss us. So we're going to just keep plugging away and trying to find ways to connect with our audience.
And in the meantime, I would assume that with this good news of not just one vaccine, but two or three, that we see the light at the end of the tunnel. And I should think you are at least guardedly optimistic about a 2021-22 season that you're probably beginning to plan for. Is that right?
We are. We have a play reading committee that is meeting and coming up with many different scenarios. If this happens, then we're going to try to do this. If that happens, we're going to try to do that. You know, it's not only when the city will allow us to reopen, it's when do people feel safe? And when do our volunteers feel safe? When are they going to audition for plays again? So we have two masters we serve. The audience, when will they feel safe in coming back? And when will the volunteers feel safe performing and spending 3 months with a room full of strangers? So what I get from a lot of people is, I don't know, I can't wait, but I'm unsure. And so that uncertainty is something that we're just trying to find different ways of getting around. You know, maybe two or three different seasons we'll start planning for, and we'll see what happens. And if everything goes well, we'll be up and running for Mamma Mia. Mamma Mia is still scheduled for May, and we hope we cross our fingers on that. If not, maybe it'll be August, maybe it'll be September.
Well, in the meantime, one thing we can count on for sure is this next signature Spotlight Series concert, I'll Be Home for Christmas. Jocelyn, remind everybody of what they do if they would like to partake of this special holiday offering from the Guild.
Yeah, just go to our website, racinetheater.org. You will find it under the Signature Spotlight area. You just click on Purchase Ticket. Take you to a website, you buy your ticket, and you'll get an email with a link. And the moment you click that link, you get directed right to the concert. So it's pretty easy way to get there. And it'll be a really fun concert. It's about an hour long too. So, you know, you can grab some snacks, hot cocoa, a cocktail, sit down, cozy up on the couch, and really enjoy the show.
And by purchasing a ticket for this, you are supporting the Racine Theater Guild. Jocelyn Fish and Doug Instanis from the Racine Theater Guild, thank you for being part of the morning show today. Best wishes to you and happy holidays.
Thank you, Greg.
You too.
Tomorrow on the morning show, it's Nan Calvert's monthly visit to the program, and we'll be talking about salt, of all things. And yes, salt has something to do with the environment. Salt is a very serious pollutant, and this time of year, when it starts to snow and we start to have ice, we start to put down salt on our roads and on our driveways, and that can really be a problem for the environment. We're going to explore that with Allison Madison, who is with a group called Wisconsin Saltwise, and we'll be finding out about some of the things that can be done to curb the problem of salt pollution in the environment around us. On Friday's morning show, we're going to be previewing for you a really special virtual production of A Christmas Carol that is coming from the Fleeing Artists Theater Company, involving quite a number of actors from here in southeastern Wisconsin. Also, I believe it's on Friday that we'll preview for you a holiday offering from the Choral Arts Society of Southeastern Wisconsin. The morning show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. The program is archived at our website, wgtd.org. And the program is also available as a podcast 7 days a week. In fact, if you want to continue to hear the morning show every day, to the end of the year, you want to be sure that you're subscribing to the podcast, because when the radio station goes on holiday break, right around Christmas, we will be actually not resuming regular broadcast until early January. But the Morning Show podcast will continue 7 days a week throughout. It's available on all of the major podcast platform providers, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, Spotify. Just make sure that you search for The Morning Show with Greg Berg. The time is exactly 9 o'clock.